The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm angry. The country is going to go through tumult as a result of one thing. President Trump didn't turn over military documents when he was asked to do so. Why is the country going to have to go through all this angst and tumult? Why did he just turn the documents in?
We've said from the beginning, this is all about money. If you're trying to figure out Donald Trump's motive, whatever it is, we've been saying for 8 years, it's all about money. So I'm not, we have absolutely no evidence that he was selling this information to anybody. But I would never say, oh, he was just doing this to hug the boxes. There's every reason to believe, given his past, that there would be a possibility that he might trade this information, if not directly for money, maybe for access, maybe just so he can make contacts and build a hotel in this place or that place.
He engaged in a course of deceitful conduct, according to the indictment, that was a clear crime if those allegations are true, and was outrageous. According to the indictment, is he took the documents out of storage, led his lawyer to believe that he'd be conducting a full search of the boxes, and then caused his lawyer to file with the court something saying that he had completed a search.
Well, I think he was kind of a collector of things that he thought were of interest to him for some reason or another. Clippings, mementos, classified documents. And it was very disturbing.
Having Trump not only have had the codes, but now having the classified information for Americans and being able to put that out and share it in his resort with anyone and everyone who comes through should be terrifying to all Americans. Mm-hmm. And he needs to be shot.
I couldn't resist. He needs to be shot. She meant to say stopped. She corrected herself thereafter. But this is the storyline. Still they're out there talking about the newspaper clippings that Donald Trump ran off with. And so he's charged with 37 felonies. They want to put him in prison for more than 100 years on the documents, on the boxes, on the mementos. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com, and that comes to you every day at 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the United States. Also, you can get to our channel at Rumble. Just search for the Trumpet Daily, and you can watch the live stream there, or you can watch previous programs as well. Well, today's a show day for the traveling road show of Celtic Throne. They're going to be performing tonight in Providence, Rhode Island. I think the start time is at 7:30, as per usual. You can get to CelticThrone.com or go to the website to secure seats, tickets for tonight. There's already over 800 people scheduled to attend this evening's event. So go to CelticThrone.com to get tickets for tonight's show. If you're anywhere near Providence, Rhode Island, Thursday night, of course, they're performing back in Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia. And then next Monday, they have a show in Raleigh, North Carolina. So they're making their way up and down the East Coast of the United States. So Scarborough is convinced that Trump ran off with the documents for money. For money. He wants to sell the White House napkins for a couple hundred dollars. So says Joe Scarborough, the man that sacrificed at least $1 billion of his fortune to serve as president, never once took a presidential salary for 4 years. He just turned it back into the Treasury. He never took a salary from the U.S. government. This, and then Scarborough, the guy who acts like he lives in Florida so that he doesn't have to pay as much tax as he would if he was a resident in New York. Scarborough says he's doing it for money. And then to hear John Bolton, you know, talk about the clippings he likes to keep. He's running with the story that appeared last week in the New York Times. He likes to he's a collector. He likes to collect mementos. And that's very disturbing. Disturbing. Amid all of the problems in this world, in this nation today. I mean, what really gets Mitt Romney angry is Donald Trump taking some documents and declassifying them, by the way, but leave that aside. And then, of course, to get the expert opinion on this story, that last woman there that accidentally said that he should be shot, she is a non-voting delegate from the U.S. Virgin Islands. So, of course, we're going to go she's the go-to source for all things Trump. I mean, we've got to, he should be shot or at least stopped. He should be stopped, says the non-voting delegate from the U.S. Virgin Islands. Here's Byron York at the Washington Examiner. Why did Trump do it? Why did he do it? It says here, why did Trump keep all that stuff in the first place? Whether it was legal or not, why did he do it? As they always do, Trump's adversaries have leaped to the darkest explanation possible. Some have theorized that he is telling the nation's secrets to foreign governments, Saudi Arabia, China, Russia. You know, Russia, Russia, Russia. They're still on that. Trump is selling out the United States, say the people who are covering for the Biden crime family, which has sold out the United States. Can't make this up. Unfortunately for those critics, Special Counsel Jack Smith, in a detailed indictment, made no allegation at all about Trump selling the information or in any way disseminating it for profit. But listen now. There's nothing in the indictment that says that. But Joe Scarborough says it. He's convinced that Donald Trump made off with the boxes of documents so that he could sell them. Says now there is growing agreement, this is Byron York, that the answer why Trump did it might be much simpler. Trump kept the documents alongside copies of newspapers, magazines, internet printouts, pins, hats, jackets, and other stuff because he's a pack rat, or to put it more diplomatically, because he likes to collect things. So this is what they're going to do to put Donald Trump behind bars. This is Hitler's crime. He likes to collect things. He loves mementos. He loves clippings from newspapers, from magazines. I mean, this is unbelievable. As I say, it was last week, the New York Times headline, at the heart of the documents case, Trump's attachment to his boxes. That's a serious headline. It's supposed to be anyway. I mean, for those of us that work for this program, it's laugh out loud hilarious. But I mean, it is serious because 37 felonies? 100 years in prison for this? Because of his attachment to boxes? You heard me correctly. Karl Rove, I know I gave this to you last week. The blame for this calamity rests solely on Mr. Trump and his childish impulse to keep mementos. It's a calamity. It made Mitt Romney angry. When has Mitt Romney ever even been angry? Was he ever angry at anything Obama did? Is he angry at the Biden crime family taking in bribes from Ukrainian oligarchs, from Burisma? Is he angry that Burisma hired Hunter Biden, who knows nothing about oil and gas, and paid him like $70,000 a month? Does that upset anyone? Mitt Romney angry because of the mementos, because of the documents, the papers. He was probably really angry at the rustling papers and the pool leak as well. Here they go again. Yeah, he's selling nuclear secrets. They ran with that soon after the Mar-a-Lago raid, then found out there's nothing to that story. Now they're resurrecting it. They're running with it again. It's all a political hit job, and really, Bill Barr admits as much in this next clip, clip two.
Trump has, you know, has many good qualities, and he accomplished some good things. But the fact of the matter is, he is a consummate narcissist, and he constantly engages in reckless conduct that puts his political followers at risk, and the conservative and Republican agenda at risk.
Would he put the country at risk if he was in the White House again?
He will always put his own interests and gratifying his own ego ahead of everything else, including the country's interests. There's no question about it. This is a perfect example of that. He's like a defiant nine-year-old kid who's always pushing the glass toward the edge of the table, defying his parents to stop him from doing it. It's a means of self-assertion and exerting his dominance over other people. And he's a very petty individual who will always put his interests ahead of the country's, his personal gratification of his, you know, of his ego. But our country can't be a therapy session for, you know, a troubled man like this.
The consummate narcissist who puts his personal interest ahead of the country. This is a man who set aside his personal interest, his billion-dollar business, and lost a billion while he was in office. And now half the country hates him. Before becoming president, he was universally loved across the nation. Everybody adored this man. Hillary Clinton wanted him to be there at a wedding in the family. Or maybe she attended his wedding. I forget the details. But you've seen the footage. You've seen the pictures. You've seen the snapshots. Bill Barr. Bill Avenatti Barr. He's on TV every 15 minutes. And what's he doing? He's there. I mean, it shows it's political. He did a few good things, but look, he's a narcissist. We can't have, this is not a therapy session coming into the White House. We can't have four more years of this. And so there he is talking about how serious the allegations are. That's Bill Barr hoping and praying that Donald Trump doesn't return to office. And that's Bill Barr protecting the weaponized deep state. Obama's weaponized deep state. This is from Sundance. It says here, Bill Barr continued his talk appearances this week, specifically organized by the apparatus in control of D.C. to attack Donald Trump and position the executive branch of government as subservient to the interest of the United States intelligence community. I mean, what makes them angry is when Donald Trump says, I was president, I had the authority to declassify. And then in comes the intelligence community to say, oh, no, you don't. No, we control that. The unelected bureaucrats control all of those mementos. They control the napkins. It says, don't miss the forest when you're looking at the trees. Barr is advocating for a system of government that has institutional interests above the Constitution. They're shredding the Constitution to protect their beloved and weaponized deep state. Obama's weaponized deep state. It says here, according to Bill Barr, the DOJ, FBI, and the U.S. intel community control the office of the president. Look at what he's saying. The bureaucracy of the administrative state is above the chief executive office holder. I mean, theoretically, all of those agencies, they're an extension of the executive branch, the presidency, that is. And you see how they operate. You see the disdain they have for Congress when Congress tries to provide congressional oversight. They just lie, or they stonewall, or they say, I can't answer that because of sources and methods. These people are above the law, and Donald Trump has exposed them, and Donald Trump represents an existential threat to this community, to this deep state, this administrative state. Why is he doing this? That's a much more important question than the one Byron York asked, but they got to ask it. Why did he take the boxes? Why is Bill Barr out there every 15 minutes now? Does he really believe this? The answer is yes. And essentially what Bill Barr is doing is protecting the system that George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Barack Obama constructed and then used respectively. Barr is defending the surveillance state, the post-Patriot Act state of intelligence agency control over the government. He's out there to protect his own. He's out there to protect the administrative state. This is another piece from the American Thinker. It says, if Barr were an honorable former public servant committed to the rule of law, he would have put Costa in his place, rebuking him for apparently raising a trial balloon about a January 6 indictment. If the House GOP does not express outrage, let the persecution campaign proceed. Well, it goes into some details about Barr's background and how he's not. He's certainly not an honorable man. He's not behaving in an honorable fashion at this point in his career. For sure. He's there to protect the DOJ. And so they got, and if you've noticed, and I'll play some clips later, the dear leader's out there as well. We played the one clip from the Axelrod interview from just a week or two ago. CNN was promoting their big interview. He's going to sit down with Christine Amanpour. I'm sure that'll be riveting. Hopefully we can cut out some of the pauses and play a few clips for you after that. The dear leader, Barack Obama. He's going to CNN. Why is he making so many appearances? Because he's got to protect the weaponized deep state as well. These people are panicking. They're nervous. They're being exposed. And it all revolves around Donald Trump. And despite all of these attacks, listen to John Carl. This is, I think, at ABC or maybe NBC. He's talking about the approval rating of Donald Trump since the indictment, clip number three.
I want to get to you about the political impact of that indictment. The bottom line is his favorable ratings actually increased and his unfavorable ratings went down among Republican voters and independents who lean Republican. So in other words, his standing among Republicans actually has improved since this indictment was announced.
What? How is Donald Trump becoming more popular? How is his standing improving? Well, because people see through it. I think I have this. This is the latest national GOP poll. Harris and Harvard has Trump at 45 points over DeSantis. DeSantis was in the mid-20s before he announced. Now he's slumping into the mid-teens. So DeSantis is going down. And even as Trump goes up, even post-indictment Trump, they're showing him winning by 6 points against Biden. You can't trust any of the polls, but John Carl, he couldn't even read. I didn't play all the flubs, but he could hardly even read it. They're so flustered. How does this happen? I guess we're going to have to try to beat him at the ballot box. That's what many of them must be thinking. Listen to this wishful thinking. I had to include this because, again, it's hilarious. Clip four.
Chris Christie has positioned himself in the perfect way to be that person who is the alternative to Donald Trump as he's knocking the teapot over on all this information that we're getting, okay?
Chris Christie is in perfect position at the bottom, at the tail end. Of all of these candidates running for the Republican ticket, that's what these people hope. It's the wishful thinking that they broadcast. Surely the indictment will bring him down, just like the Mar-a-Lago raid. It has to. The midterm elections, January 6th, insurrection, the election steal lie. Surely this is all going to bring him down. And Chris Christie, of all people, he's positioned himself perfectly to win the Republican nomination. And meanwhile, you've got the, as I said last week, of course, all of this is just a perfect distraction, really. A head fake to take your focus off of the Biden crime family. All of the creepy and lawless things that this family gets away with and has gotten away with, even under the watch of Bill Barr when he was over the DOJ. Listen to this from Jesse Waters on Friday night, clip nine.
This is why Joe Biden's not allowed to campaign. Even if Joe Biden wanted to campaign, his handlers wouldn't let him. President Joe Biden doesn't really have much of a say in the Biden presidency.
President Biden came out publicly and said that he expected to talk to President Xi soon, in his words, and that they were going to get to the bottom of this. Well, what we're learning is that behind the scenes, what happened is the president wanted to talk to President Xi, and his aides made the case that it wasn't the time for that, that a phone call between the two leaders was not the thing to do. The president was essentially talked out of doing what he thought was potentially strategically the thing to do, which...
So Biden's corrupt, creepy, and not in charge. Got it. His staff wouldn't let him shoot down the China spy balloon, and then they wouldn't let him call China afterwards. Now, a diligent media would connect the dots. China pays the Bidens millions of dollars, and then Biden goes soft on China. But despite the cover-up, a majority of Americans now believe Joe Biden took foreign bribes in exchange for policy.
So try to change the subject. Try to change the subject if you can. Get the Dear Leader on CNN in prime time. Don't let people stop and ponder that this family is selling out the United States of America. Jesse there said he's not allowed to campaign. He was following on some footage of a speech that Biden gave in Connecticut on Friday. Here's a sampling of that, clip 8.
And in most cities down in Philadelphia and New York, areas I know well, like up here, you'd see a truck pull up, pull to the curb and selling weapons, selling guns, selling AR-15, selling weapons. Now, as some of you know, I'd usually come down and say hi to all of you. They'd tell me there's a storm coming in. Is that right? Is that still the deal? That's the truth. Now, don't make a lie. As that scene in the John Wayne movie, don't make me a dog-faced lying pony soldier. All right? God save the queen, man.
He concluded his remarks by saying, God save the queen, and he was in Connecticut. And I guess if he's talking about Queen Elizabeth, I mean, she's dead. This is truly bizarre. And gun trucks? Yeah, just pulling up to a corner, like right out here on Simmons and Bryant. Gun trucks with AR-15s in the back. Happens all the time in America, doesn't it? This is bizarre. It's fantasy. They're lies. He is the whatever pony soldier. He spews lies continually. And the establishment in Washington, like Mitt Romney, they cover for him and his family. All of them, Hunter, everybody, Jim. Tucker comes along and exposes the crimes. And of course, you can see why he's run out of Fox. He's got to do it on his own. Speaking of Tucker, Donald Trump agrees with him. He came out and posted a 3-minute video following Tucker's latest episode on Twitter last week. This is clip 5.
Tucker Carlson, a very good guy, is exactly right. The number one reason the totally corrupt Biden administration and the sick Washington establishment are after me is because I stand up to their failed foreign policy agenda. The one thing Washington cannot forgive is that I put America first, always put America first. I could never help it. I have to do that in order to make America great again. I reject their foolish and disastrous foreign wars, their horrific globalist trade deals, their open border catastrophes, their corruption of our intelligence system, and it's never been more corrupt, and all of the other betrayals of the American people.
They're spot on, Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson. Tucker, remember, he went through the wannabe dictator, Chiron. The Fox News producer that posted that for 27 seconds, referring to Joe Biden. And then he was fired instantly. He had to pack up his things that day and moved out of the Fox offices. Because you don't say that Joe Biden is a wannabe dictator. You can say that about Trump all you want, but not about Joe Biden. That crosses a line. Listen to this from Fox News yesterday, clip 6.
Fox News briefly put up a banner that went too far on the day of Donald Trump's arraignment, referring to President Biden. Wannabe dictator speaks at White House after having his political rival arrested. Fox said in a statement the Chyron was taken down immediately and was addressed.
And was it addressed? Boy, yes, it was. They addressed it right away. Adam Schiff, Mitt Romney, all those people outraged. Outraged that Fox would ever put up a banner such as that. Tucker's gone. Now that producer's gone. This is Fox News. The dear leader had his way, he'd still blot it out entirely. This is another from Donald Trump's post following that Tucker episode, clip 7.
That's why, despite the massive criminality and corruption of the Clintons, the Bidens, the Obamas, and all the rest, none of them ever get indicted or ever get investigated. They're totally protected by a fake and disgusting system. But I did everything right, and the system tries to throw me right into a jail. They can't beat me at the ballot box, so they're out there trying to take me out by other means, anything they can think of. These people don't love our country. As I've said before, if I renounced my beliefs or if I stayed silent, the persecution would stop. If I didn't run for office or if I wasn't leading by a lot, it would all end and end very nicely. I'd have a much easier life. But I can't do that, and I won't do that.
He keeps right on fighting. He keeps right on. Bill Barr says he's the consummate narcissist. That's a man who's made a lot of sacrifices for his country. That's a man who's facing 37 felonies, potentially. It's a bogus indictment. We know this. But he's potentially facing prison time. And Bill Barr says he's got self-interest ahead of your interest. His popularity just keeps going up. He posted that after the arraignment, after Tucker's episode. You remember the arraignment last week when he went to that Miami diner and said hi to all the people and said a few things about his fight against this unjust attack coming from the George Soros prosecutor. Sundance, in reacting to that, he says, departing the federal courthouse, Trump stopped at a well-known cafe. A variety of locally known religious and community people were there to greet President Trump and to pray with him to defeat the Marxist enemy within the American government. It's quite remarkable. It was a quite remarkable moment. President Trump took the time to greet the crowd, thank them for their support, and encourage everyone to stay focused on making America great again. President Trump looked upbeat, sounds positive, and reflects the happy warrior spirit as he is surrounded by a community who admires and respects his leadership. This is Miami-Dade community that turned red specifically to support Donald Trump and the American First agenda, he advances. It says, at a certain point, you do end up shaking your head at the professionally Republican candidates who think they can defeat our president. It really is absurd when you think about it. And then realize those candidates are not stupid people. They too understand they cannot defeat President Trump, yet there they are. There they are, and we've got to all play along with these fake narratives. Chris Christie's in a perfect position. It says here, it makes you realize the scope of elitist perspectives and financial corruption in Republican political circles when you think about a corporate system demanding someone else, and yet the overwhelming majority of the voting base say, nope, Trump is our guy. Yet the corporate party will not stop trying to destroy him. That's the objective. Get Trump. Destroy Trump. Bring forward these bogus charges. Talk about the mementos. Talk about the documents. Talk about, well, let's get the lawyers to flip on Trump so we can use their private conversations against Trump. Listen to this former Trump attorney on with Laura Ingraham last week, clip 14.
What they do reveal is ordinary attorney-client communications, which they then used to try and taint the grand jury. they then use to put into their indictment things that should never be said outside of an attorney-client communication setting, to try to separate Evan Corcoran from the legal team so he becomes a witness instead of a lawyer.
They wanted to turn him against President Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
How poisonous is this to the legal process if you can't, especially someone like the president who's been such a target for so many years, you can't actually hire attorneys and expect that the
Correct.
Government's not going to try to flip them against you using whatever means necessary.
The precedent that Jack Smith is trying to set here is that when clients ask us questions, they didn't go to law school, and they have to ask us, are we allowed to do, what are we allowed to do? What do we have to do? And in this case, President Trump says, hey, I read about Hillary Clinton and her lawyer, David Kendall, deleted 33,000 emails.
Yeah.
Can we do the same thing? And under Jack Smith's rule, any question the client asks, if we say, no, you can't do that, that's a crime.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is just upends all of attorney-client privilege ethics rules that I ever learned in law school.
I believe this case, there's going to be serious litigation in the pretrial stage over prosecutorial misconduct by this team, which could entirely upend this case. We may never get to a trial. We may never actually have to address any of the substantive issues because of the misconduct of Jack Smith and his team.
All of this prosecutorial misconduct, all of these ridiculous, bogus charges. But just go forward, get Trump, get him any way that you can. And the fact that he, like Sundance says, the fact that he could stay so positive and demonstrate so much courage, even in the midst of all of these unjust attacks, it says something about the man's character. He certainly does have a fighting spirit. And he's also positive when you would think he would be depressed and discouraged. The media try to say he's down and dejected, but he's obviously not. Keeps on posting his videos, keeps on making the campaign speeches. Morning Mika, that's what Steve Bannon calls her. She said today that, look, just don't, okay, if you don't want to listen to the talking heads, listen to Trump himself. He says that the documents were his. How dare he? Well, you can't exactly, if you're watching that network, you can't exactly listen to Donald Trump himself because they blot him out. They didn't carry the live speech that he gave in New Jersey following the arraignment because they don't want you to hear what he has to say. I mean, how rich for her this morning to say, okay, if you don't believe us, at least believe Trump. He doesn't have the right. She thinks like Bill Barr. You've got the deep state up here, and then somewhere down here you've got president, and all the documents belong to these people up here. It's ridiculous on its face. When we come back, we'll give you some more clips from the dear leader, Barack Obama, who's out there trying to stir up a race war, that's all. This is, this is what he really specializes in, stirring up racial hatred and animosity. He talked at length on it with David Axelrod. We'll come back and get to those clips. And also, we'll come back with the feedback from the show in Virginia Beach last Thursday. Once again, people were just blown away at the quality and the energy that the performers brought to Celtic Throne in Virginia Beach. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today. The United States and Britain in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily.
And yes. They can dance and play instruments and sing. It's amazing.
The music is really good, and the light, yes. The lighting is really good. I love the lighting.
See, I thought it was like professional. Like better than some like Lord of the Dance I'd seen, honestly. To be so young, anyway, I thought, it was really good.
Yeah,
it was great. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, it was fabulous. It's amazing. They're so young and just spot on and just so well choreographed. A lot of emotion and power and modern with the old. It was cool.
I can't believe how young they are. They're so talented.
Full of energy and they were terrific.
Absolutely amazing. I cannot believe the energy that these kids have. I couldn't stop. I was clapping. I was stomping. I absolutely loved it.
I tell you, you know, the travel and all that you do must be quite a job to put all that together. So yeah. Thanks to all of you backstage who do the good job.
It was remarkable. I loved it. Yeah, but very, very good. I would come again.
Please
so,
come
so
back.
Good.
Please come back.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, the talent, the emotions, just, it was just wow. So, and I just love the, you know, they all have these big families. My wife and I have 5 kids ourselves, and we just heard about all the families and everything. So, you know, I hope they come back again next year because we would love to come and bring some of our older kids this time.
Fantastic. So much energy, so much heart.
It was mesmerizing. Not one slip that I saw, not that I was looking critically, but I was mesmerized and I loved everything.
The show was awesome. Fact is, I was at the Wilmington show 2 weeks ago. And when I saw you were going to be in Virginia Beach, I called my niece and said, I'm coming down and we're going to a show. So it's just fabulous. I always wanted to see Riverdance, but now I don't care because you guys really topped it.
Wow, the woman made a trip from Wilmington to Virginia Beach to see it for a second time. Tonight, maybe she'll drive up to Providence tonight, who knows? But tonight they're performing in Providence, Rhode Island. I mean, this is probably as close as it'll ever get to some of you in the northeast of the United States. So go to CelticThrone.com if you'd like to secure your tickets for this evening's show. I think we've got a little 30-second promo lined up that advertises the show if you guys want to play that. We've had some new viewers over at Live from America. They post one of our shows every Saturday morning that have asked because they hear me plugging Celtic Throne, and they've asked, what's Celtic Throne? Well, there you go. It's all that and more. You really have to see it for yourself to know what it is, to know how powerful it is, to know how impactful it is, to know how enjoyable and fun it is, and the music is great. The choreography is wonderful. The special effects, stunning. So that's CelticThrone.com if you want to see one of the few remaining shows left. We've just got, what is it? I think 4 more shows on the road and then 2 shows to conclude here in July, July 9th and July 16th at beautiful Armstrong Auditorium here on our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. It's so uplifting. I don't even want to transition into this next segment, But here it is. This is the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. He sat down with David Axelrod a week or so ago and had this to say, clip 10.
So what is remarkable about this country has always been that tension, this yin and yang. We can have a declaration of independence and declare that all men are created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights. And then we can also have a three-fifths clause in a companion document that helps found the country. You know, we can have the person who wrote that, Jefferson, not just lift up those magnificent words, but also help to operationalize this experiment in democracy. And you can also have Jefferson as a slaveholder, right? And so we are always wrestling with the ideal, the world as we want it to be, and the world as it is. And our job then, successive generations, has been to try to close that gap. The good news is that I think we are closer to an approximation of the ideal than we were 100 years ago or 200 years ago. But at any given moment in history, that gap can widen or shrink. And I think we are right now at a moment in which a particular sort of polarization, you know, what's been called the great sorting, in which the two major political parties have become much more rigidly segregated in their views across a whole spectrum of issues.
It's interesting, even the contrast between what you just heard there and Trump going to the Miami diner after his arraignment and people showing up in droves to cheer him on. But here's the dear leader talking about, yeah, the tension and Jefferson, the slaveholder. And while we may have made some progress compared to 200 or even 100 years ago, now at any moment, it could worsen. And we're at that moment, I think, where we're becoming more segregated. This is Barack Obama. No wonder they have to steal elections to win. What a depressing message. Of course, America has some faults. Every country does. But the self-hatred, the fundamental transformation, you can see why he wanted to transform everything. He just wants to blot out the opposition and make sure it's just nobody but communists, I guess. Listen to what he said about the Tea Party in this same interview, clip 11.
I think it's fair to say that something like the Tea Party does not get the traction, does not generate the heat that it does. Had it not been for the fact that I represented something that looked like something very foreign to some people and scary. I think if you tracked Fox News coverage all the way up through Tucker Carlson talking about, you know, white people are all being replaced, mm-hmm. And that Democrats are deliberately trying to bring in illegal immigrants and then give them voting rights and welfare checks to buy them off and build the Democratic majority. I think that argument probably gets less traction if it wasn't me who was president at the time.
Right. The Tea Party wouldn't have gotten any traction were it not for the fact that you had a president who was half black. And Tucker Carlson, he wouldn't, his arguments wouldn't have gotten much play if it were not for the fact that I was a black president. So says the dear leader. In other words, the Tea Party, Tucker, they're racist. That's right, they're racist. They're scared of the half-black man. They're scared. It has nothing to do with his communist policies. They're scared because he's black. He's out there trying to stir up hatred. This is what he does best. In America Under Attack, you know about this book, I know. My father says, Obama experienced no significant race-related problems growing up. That's right, he's been pampered every step along the way. He's a multimillionaire. He's made hundreds of millions of dollars. He's on the shows now every 15 minutes, like Bill Barr, I guess. Did he take his salary when he was president? He experienced no significant race-related problems growing up, but that didn't keep him from using race as a political tool later in life. Frank Marshall Davis was instrumental in fanning the flames of racial grievance and inspiring the racial agenda of the future president of the United States. He's been harping on this from day one. My father writes here, he's even said that there's racism in our DNA. How do you correct a problem that severe, that horrible? Now, Donald Trump never went around with that kind of a message. And his popularity, by the way, it's skyrocketing in the black community. How is that possible? Says here, President Obama repeatedly made public remarks on racially charged issues. He said things that were provably false and that played well to racist radicals. At one point, Obama said racism is part of America's DNA. That means the nation is irredeemably racist. So supposing you have the two on the campaign trail, and they're not going to try to steal it. They're just going to try to win at the ballot. But on the one hand, you've got, hey, let's make America great. Let's be a great nation, unified. And then on the other hand, you've got the candidate saying, we're irredeemably racist. Which message do you think will win out? Which message do you suppose will be more popular with everyday ordinary Americans? You know the answer to that. It says such a baseless accusation is satanic to its core. Satan uses race as a weapon to divide people. That's what he's doing there. He's dividing people. He's dividing the nation. And the regime media, they play right along with it. It says here, in the post-Obama America, mainstream media and radical Democrats continually accuse Republicans and everyday Americans of being racist. In almost every case, they're lying, and they know they're lying. Such ugly, racist remarks are filling the country with hatred and division that will lead to violence and race war. They'll get what they're aiming for at some point. Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Ezekiel 4 and 5, those are sobering prophecies, and they haven't yet been fulfilled, not fully. It says, this is just one example of how Barack Obama transformed America. This is, remember, he was, all of the bleeding heart liberals on the news networks were saying how in 2008, if Obama could just get in there, he's going to heal. He's going to heal the divide in America. Look at how much more division and strife there is today. How much hatred there is for law enforcement, except for the ones on January 6th. But outside of that, I mean, they've got to be defunded. They've got to be handcuffed because of racism. That's been the message. That's been the message for going on 15 years. It's just one example of how Barack Obama transformed America. Listen again to the Dear Leader in that interview, clip 12.
Race has always been the fault line in American politics, society, and culture. It was the first and the most powerful, the most elemental. The idea that that would no longer be the case once I was president was foolish, right? I mean, you know, change takes time. And there was going to be some pushback. And look, by the way, it reflected a real reality, right? If you look at third graders in the United States, the demographic there is really different than folks our age.
Yeah.
And so the country is becoming much more diverse, much browner. And, you know, that's going to be scary for folks who feel as if that means something's being taken away from me.
Yeah.
The same as
we saw that, by the way. I mean, my father was a Jewish immigrant, Jews, Poles, Italians.
It's happened throughout our history. Now, you add on top of that, right, gender and sexual politics. You know, I think.
Wait, can I just interrupt you before we leave race? I wasn't
going to leave it.
Of course, he's not going to leave it. This is all he knows. It's in his DNA. I mean, the racial tension, the fault line, as he puts it. And then he brings in gender and sexual politics. This is a communist through and through. Just like I said on Friday's show, destroy the family. Turn it upside down and just promote hatred and division and strife. Have give the government power, more power, to control everything. This is from Great Again, our booklet. You Have America Under Attack, a good companion book to that would be Great Again. Also by my father, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. It says, race is a highly charged subject in the United States. Past wrongs and present inequalities create fertile ground for hurt, frustration, and anger. This president, speaking of Obama, used every opportunity to reinforce the black community's sense of grievance. He's out there whipping up the grievance culture. And with some, as I say, a lot of blacks are leaving this message and turning to Donald Trump in droves. But for others, you see the worst kind of hatred and racism to go with it. This is one more clip from that interview, clip 13.
I think there is a long history of African-American or other minority candidates within the Republican Party who will validate America and say, everything's great and we can all make it. I mean, Nikki Haley, I think, has a similar approach.
She does, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, look at me. I'm an Asian Indian-American woman, and my family came here, and we worked hard. Clarence Thomas has probably gave the same speech at some point, guarantee in some commencement, as did Alan Keyes, the first guy that I ran against. And the quotes you made about, you know, from my speech in 2004 about there's a United States of America, that has to be undergirded with an honest accounting of our past and our present. And so if a Republican who may even be sincere in saying, I want us all to live together, doesn't have a plan for how do we address crippling generational poverty that is a consequence of hundreds of years of racism in the society, and we need to do something about that. There may come a time where there's somebody in the Republican Party that is more serious about actually addressing some of the deep inequality that still exists in our society that tracks race and is a consequence of our racial history. And if that happens, I think that would be fantastic. I haven't yet seen it.
How dare Clarence Thomas or Nikki Haley or Tim Scott, how dare they go out there and say, you know what, everything's great. You can do well. You can accomplish a lot in the United States of America. He hates that message, Barack Obama. He hates it. It's all about the grievance so that you can have Americans walking around with a chip on their shoulder and justify their acts of, in the worst of it, justify the acts of criminal behavior because, well, I mean, they're disadvantaged. They've been cheated. So they can go in and shoplift all that they want. My father says here, President Obama has said that he wanted to improve race relations in America. But again, we must look at the fruits. You've got to judge by fruits. Matthew 7, verses 16 through 20. That's, again, from the booklet, Great Again. What have been the results of his statements and actions? What are the results of that kind of a message? That kind of a depressing and angry message. What are the results? What are the fruits that come from it? It says here, practically everything his administration did when it intervened made the problems much worse. In this case, far worse. That's a quote from my father's booklet, Great Again. As I say, you can call our operators and get a free copy. There's no cost or obligation for any of the literature we offer on this program. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. Unfortunately, that's all that we have time for on this show, but you can join us again tomorrow. Don't worry. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll see you again next time.